Hey everyone, welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock. Really excited to welcome Kyle McDonald and Ryan Mulligan. These guys are great friends of mine and two of the leads in our sales and marketing and TPM practice within Clarkston. Tons of experience working with our CPG clients, helping them improve and optimize their promotional spend. And that's where we're going to focus today. And a lot of the challenges that we face in the industry around TPM are the same we've been facing for 20 years. However, I think over the past couple of years, we've seen a bit of a tipping point, and we're seeing companies really start to think about promotional spend a little bit more strategically. They've got the tools in place. They've got the data in place to be able to do it. And a lot of the work that we're doing with our clients is how do we start to think about how do we truly optimize the promotional spend across a variety of different channels, right? It's not just brick and mortar anymore. It's direct to consumer, it's e-commerce, it's understanding the entire omni-channel experience, and how do we optimize that promotional spend across it. So these are the topics we're going to hit upon. I think you'll really enjoy the discussion, and thanks again for listening. Kyle, Ryan, welcome to Taking Stock. How you guys doing?
Good. Pleasure to be here, Steve. This is a lifelong goal of mine to be featured on a podcast.
It's awesome. You know, I don't think Kyle feels the same, apparently. He hasn't even said hello, but it's nice to see at least one of you wants to be a part of the conversation.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Ryan. Very happy to be here.
Good. First time, well, long time listener, first time caller, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right, actually.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. So pumped to have you guys on, obviously, and we've hit upon a bunch of topics over now 25 or so podcasts we've had on Taking Stock. And this is probably the one I'm most passionate about. And the three of us talk about this topic kind of all the time. We do a lot of work within Clarkston in and around TPM. And I wanted to use this opportunity to take a little bit of a step back. I joined the consumer products industry almost 25 years ago. And I remember some of the early conversations that we had, you know, some of those things that are just kind of like fundamental within our industry, that companies are spending 15 to 20% of their revenues on promotional dollars to support, you know, the retail trade. And that's always just kind of been a given. You know, there's been a lot of discussion that this is just writing a blank check to retailers. This is a cost of doing business. But one of the things that we feel really strongly about is that ultimately promotional dollars are meant to fuel demand, fuel growth. If you look back at the past 12 months, it's been a different challenge for CPG companies. Demand has not been an issue. The biggest issue has been keeping up with demand. And we're seeing more and more companies starting to use this as an opportunity to pull back on their promotional dollars. My question to you both is, do we see potentially we're setting a precedent for a new normal? And this is an opportunity for CPG companies to finally say, no, we are not going to essentially just be writing those blank checks to retailers. And they're going to think through their promotional strategy in a different way. Or are we going to quickly move back to the way we were because consumer expectations are so high and they're trained to expect to buy on promotion? So I wanted to start there at a higher level. Curious if either of you guys have a thought there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think promotions are going away anytime soon. I think the structure of how products are promoted is definitely going to be different moving forward. You know, omni-channel promotions, leveraging e-commerce to promote in-store and promoting in-store to leverage e-commerce, right, is going to be an ongoing trend. I think a lot of the pullback on promotional activity that we saw immediately after the pandemic started was not so much a desire on the manufacturer side not to extend discounts to consumers. I think it was more lack of personnel and just sort of a really chaotic moment where it was very difficult to execute promotions because you might not have had the personnel in store that you used to have. You might not have had the personnel in your office that you used to have. People were transitioning to work from home. But it's very clear that promotion or a lot of the large companies pull back on promotion. I think some numbers I saw of Procter & Gamble, the number of items on discount fell from an average of 25 to 33% to about 17% during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's huge. And from what I've seen, it's since rebounded. But I think the shock of, oh my God, consumers are stocking up, we have to keep up with demand, is starting to lessen. And once we kind of get through that massive shock to the system, you know, we'll be back in that sort of zero-sum game of tit for tat competition and pricing promotion that we're all familiar with. It's just, you know, like I said, it's gonna look different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. What do you think? What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to kind of hypothesize on why did we stop promoting? And certainly if you think about kind of just the manufacturer and retailer dynamic that was at play in the pandemic, a lot of our clients were immediately put on allocation, right? They couldn't keep up with demand. And so what's the purpose of the promotion between the manufacturer and retailer? It's to drive increases in demand. And when you just don't have the stock, why spend the money on the promotion, right? Mm-hmm. It seemed like a pretty intuitive strategy to scale back and focus more on allocation and customer relationships that way, rather than the money you're investing with the retail partner in the promotion itself. But going back to your original question about kind of what is going to happen with promotions kind of moving forward, mm-hmm. at least here in the U.S. market, I think one, right, Ryan talking about the tit for tat and the zero sum game, I do see that coming back into play, certainly. But you know, I'm an optimist, right? I see this as a huge opportunity area for both manufacturers and retailers to completely rethink the promotional strategy. So is it going to go back to what it was? No. Is it going to stay where it is today? No. But if you have the data to support what do effective promotions look like and what should we be doing more or less of, then you can completely evolve your promotional strategy, because you're no longer married to this concept of, well, we did it last year, so we have to do it again this year. I think manufacturers have an opportunity in front of them that is, I want to rethink entirely what this looks like and what is best for both of us, right? From a retailer and manufacturer perspective. But at the end of the day, the consumer is going to drive, right? We are getting more and more into consumer segmentation and consumer engagement and understanding that path to purchase. So what is the strategic role that the promotion plays in that path to purchase as part of that cycle? This is a huge opportunity area for us within the industry.
So for those listening at home and playing bingo, data came up within the 6 minute mark from Kyle. I think the over under was 7.5 minutes. So I don't know, Kyle, if you were aware of that bet, but
anyone who said the over is.
Yeah. appreciate the feedback from both of you. And I would, I tend to agree. However, I'm not quite sure if, the need for a lot of companies that, you know, we talk to, that demand is still at a point. If you look at that in a continual supply and demand balance, we're still at the point where companies are having to, trim their manufacturing lines, focus on, you know, limited SKUs to ensure that they are meeting demand. That there is less about kind of the ability or the need to fuel growth, because that's just happening naturally. I think we'll get back to where we were, though. I agree. But one of the things, Ryan, that you brought up was kind of e-commerce, direct-to-consumer, kind of that omni-channel experience. In my opinion, that's one of the ways in which promotional strategy is vastly going to change. You know, if you think about it, it used to be a much simpler model, right, where you were essentially, you know, promoting your products through a traditional kind of brick and mortar kind of retail environment. That is very different now. And you've got, you know, the complexities of direct to consumer, e-commerce, brick and mortar, how that all plays together. There's pricing and promotional pricing transparency that we've never seen in the past. So talk a little bit about that and how you guys think that kind of shift is going to also alter the ways in which companies think about promotions.
Yeah, I think the point we're at right now is a really tremendous opportunity for manufacturers to marry consumer-centric data with their customer data. Because if you look at the buying patterns of your typical customer, chances are they're very different from what they were prior to the pandemic. I mean, I live in an urban area, and I think I'm about the only person who physically drives to the grocery store to buy my groceries, right?
Yeah.
But I think there was a few more of us before the pandemic. So you have customers who, or excuse me, consumers who are much more comfortable shopping online and moving to online channels, but they may still be running down to CVS or Walgreens or some of those local places and still making those in-store physical purchases. So what this means for manufacturers is you have to really create a profile of where your customer is shopping now to understand where you can target them. And if your customer is moving more into that e-commerce online realm, it's a tremendous opportunity because it gives you cheaper and more efficient access to the consumer, right? You can create a customized marketing or shopping or promotional experience for that consumer and reach them directly as opposed to having to reach them through the retailer like you did in the past. So really thinking about what is my consumer doing, right? And then marrying that back to the data that you're, you know, getting from your customer, right? The promotional data that's happening in store. And I don't want to like beat a dead horse here, but, you know, I think it drives home the need for having a really efficient customer and promotional data management process, right? The more sort of cleanly put together and compact your processes for managing your customer data,
yeah.
I think it'll help you sort of approach your consumer data in a similar way.
So we're like 10 to 1 right now in data references, Kyle. And I'm not sure how you feel about that. If you're excited, like, oh, you know, like Ryan's my boy, or he's stealing my thunder, or probably somewhere in between.
No, I loved it. I was ready with my own joke about Ryan referencing data, but since you stole my thunder, I will move on to my, no, I get it. So what's funny, and this was happening before the pandemic, like all the pandemic did was accelerate the growth of digital, right? The growth of online in a good way, in my opinion, right? It allows us more access to data. I'm going to laugh now every time I say the word data. Like I just not going to be able to keep it straight face. So congratulations, guys. This podcast is awesome. But really the analogy that I like to make when you kind of think of the shift to digital, we're still playing the same game. Right. At the end of the day, we're still looking for profitability. So whether that's event profitability of I'm doing this promotion or I'm using this digital merchandising tactic, we want to know what is profitable versus what is not. We want to know what customers are profitable. We want to know what SKUs are profitable. So at the end of the game, at the end of the day, we're still playing the same game. So if chess is the game, all we're doing now is using different chess pieces than we were using before. So there are now more marketing vehicles, more promotional vehicles that we have access to, and which ones are working. So we've got to make sure that we are buttoned up internally to execute the promotion and track the promotion, whatever that vehicle is that we're using, and capture the data so that we can analyze the effectiveness of it.
So Kyle, let me dig into something you said a couple of times and curious your perspective on it. So you brought up profitability a couple of times. And what is your definition of profitability? And I say that as you kind of ponder that, because it can be very different based upon the specific promotion that you're running and also the channel that you're running that promotion within. You know, we see a lot of our clients who are looking at like their direct-to-consumer channel. It's not necessarily that's trying to drive profitability. It's brand awareness. It's product innovation. It's consumer loyalty. So one of the things that I find interesting, it used to be a pretty simple definition of promotional profitability. You know, how varied has that definition become as we think about some of these different channels?
Yeah, I mean, at risk of sounding snarky here, which I normally don't hedge when I'm speaking to you, the definition has not changed, right? Profitability is still profitability. It is a calculation that assesses if you're making money, Steve.
Yes, I understand that.
Yeah,
I appreciate. First off, let's remember this is my podcast, so I can make fun of you guys, but I'm not quite sure if it's supposed to go the other way. But I think you understand what I'm getting at in terms of. The expected level of profitability on different promotions might be vastly different based upon the channel, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not new to consumer goods either, right? Not every promotion has been profitable. There are promotions that have been viewed as investment, and that's happened for years, for decades. So we have gotten better at managing and understanding profitability as an industry, right? With all the access to data, big data, whatever term we want to use, we've gotten much better at understanding and measuring the profitability. The thing that is changing is the equation is evolving. So because there's more tactics that can be used and more things that we can be spending money on, all of those items don't look the same. So we have maybe a TPM system where promotions are being planned. We have a marketing system where some of the digital activities are being planned. And those don't always play nice with one another. We also have the added expense, right? So a lot of the what we call non-trade or, kind of cost of doing businesses, supply chain expenses, you name it, that need to be factored in. If you're looking at customer profitability, it's not just promotions and it's not just demand generating activities anymore. There are a number of cost to serve metrics that need to be included within that. So one, profitability hasn't changed as a whole. We need to be measuring it. But we are seeing that with some of these new vehicles like direct to consumer and maybe some digital, there is some trial by fire that's happening, and your expectations as a brand owner are not always going to be to drive profitability in year one or maybe ever, right? It might be to drive trial to generate, right? It's all a matter of what are our goals? What are we trying to get? And profitability isn't always the game.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I almost see direct to consumer for consumer companies being almost like the modern display or the modern feature, right?
Yeah.
It's a way to draw eyeballs and create impulse purchases because.
Or the flagship store as well could be a little bit of that, right?
Yeah. As somebody whose previous career was in the candy and alcohol space, like the death of the display is like together? Kills me. It kills me.
Together, candy and alcohol, or I know these are different experiences.
Different times, different target consumers. But, the death of the display hurts me in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of where those industries, that's where we made all of our money, right? Where those Corrugate, seasonal shippers where you'd grab your Halloween candy and go. So if you are a manufacturer that does a lot of innovation and relies on that impulse purchase, I think DTC, some of these online channels are kind of starting to fill that void. It's still, it's still a bigger decision for the consumer to say, okay, let me hit this link on Instagram, click purchase and use Apple Pay as opposed to let me just grab this bag and throw it in my cart. But, I think that's where I see DTC really making an impact.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, just take a few minutes here. And Ryan, maybe I'll start with you because you do have that tangible sales experience. One of the challenges that we face when we're deploying trade systems and processes to CPG companies is working with your end users and your sales organization. And there's always the struggle of what is the right mix of top down, here's your promotional dollars, and we're going to set them at the beginning of the year, and we're going to be locked to that number, versus what is the right amount of flexibility and agility that a salesperson needs to be able to course correct. And that course correct could be, hey, I'm going to double down on this brand. I'm going to double down with this retailer, or I'm going to shift dollars from one promotional strategy to another, or maybe even shifts. I know Kyle, we have experience with this. We're going to shift dollars out of promotions and we're going to shift it to more traditional consumer marketing. As all this kind of comes together, what do organizations need to do to kind of have a little bit more agility? And that agility is in terms of the way dollars are being allocated, but also salespeople. Like how much agility do we want to allow for from a salesperson?
I mean, I think the organization wants to allow for as much agility from a salesperson as they can. I think the challenge in that is that salespeople can be very protective of their budgets and the dollars that are allocated to them. If you think about it, when we work with customer teams very frequently have a strong ownership of the client they work with. They know what their client likes. This is how my client works. This is the only way to serve the client. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in this world where consumers are not as retailer loyal as they used to be, and they're shifting between retailers and outlets, I think organizations need to be dynamic and say, listen, you know, we're not experiencing the same lift from retailer A that we used to, but retailer B is going gangbusters because of their contactless delivery or their in-store pickup. We have to shift funds, you know, in order to fund the activity at retailer B. You know, making that sell to the salesperson is tough because, you know, in their view, if you take my funding away this year, I'll probably won't get it next year. And it's going to be harder for me to do my job. So it's a tough battle.
Yeah, I think of it's a concept that's been evolving. I mean, honestly, I think back to some of the projects, Steve, we were doing 10 years ago. We started talking about this concept of continuous planning. It was tough to execute it because there is an annual nature to how we're planning our business, right? Even internally, there's an annual nature to how retailers are planning their business as far as who gets what budget and how much are we gonna spend. So I do think there's an element of annual planning that will never go away. But adopting this continuous planning mindset internally of being able to shift, right? And you said the word agility. That's exactly where I go with it. Is we need the structure to be able to understand in a fair and equitable way how the different sales teams are earning their funds, and have clear and concise metrics around how they can earn additional. So opportunistic type funds, discretionary type funds, there needs to be clear guidelines around that. But then we need to relinquish controls that dictate how they spend it. I think that's the big thing that we're seeing in the market right now, is how you earn it is no longer directly related to how you spend it. And that breeds agility, because that is empowering the salesperson to take that general manager mindset and deploy the money based on what's mutually beneficial for both their own business and their own brands, as well as the retailer. So when things like the pandemic happen or other significant events, we need to be able to, or insignificant events even, right? There are just opportunities that come up throughout the planning year that we did not factor into our initial plan. And we want to be able to capitalize on those if we think they're going to be profitable, or if we think it's a good investment in the relationship. And so taking that agile mindset across the board, across all functions, I know we're talking about sales, but sales and demand planning, right? The supply chain have gotten a lot more agile, right? The communication throughout the pandemic has been on point in order to stay afloat, right? When we're on allocation. Now factor in, obviously marketing plays a big part in the agility in finance. We need our finance partners who are a little bit in control of that earning to adopt a more agile mindset to kind of relinquish some of the control on how the spending happens.
Yeah, Kyle, you brought up an interesting point when you said metrics. I think a lot of organizations still conduct their customer analytics on sort of a silo basis. So it's very difficult to compare customer A to customer B, because we're assessing the customer differently based on the customer team. So the more you can kind of centralize and create metrics that span customers, right, it makes it easier for finance or some of those other departments to make that case to sales that, you know, you're either underperforming or overperforming compared to, you know, other customers internally. So,
Yeah, I heard a rumor that data can help with that.
I always could. All right, before we go down to data rattle, I appreciate the conversation very much, guys. We could probably spend another hour and a half talking about it and really fill out those data bingo cards, but we'll save that for a different time. But appreciate the perspective. Hope you guys enjoyed being on. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll catch up soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening. What I thought was a great discussion and great insight from these guys around promotional strategy within the CPG industry. You know, Kyle brought up the general manager mindset, and that is absolutely what we believe is a key to success. Right? You need a sales organization that is thinking about mutual manufacturer, retailer profitability, and managing it like a business. This is not just something that's meant to drive top line growth. You need to think about how do we leverage every single dollar to drive that mutual benefit and connect with the consumer in a really meaningful way. So hopefully some of the insights that were shared are helpful to you all as you think about your promotional strategies. Again, appreciate you all listening. We've got some great topics coming up over the next few weeks, diving deeper into some of those key capabilities that we think CPG organizations need to be rolling out in 2021. Thanks always for listening, and we'll talk again soon. We'll be right back.